So I wouldn't necessarily change anything, but I definitely would do, if you picked me up, put me in Florida, I would not have done it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
the beatings made you wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good time.
Welcome to Agent Success Podcast. If you're a real estate agent looking to succeed in today's crazy market, well, you're in the right place. Each week, we talk with successful real estate agents willing to share their expert insights, trade secrets, and mindset that help them to succeed. There's no fluff, just straight to the point content that prioritizes one thing above all, your success. So without further ado, let's cut to the chase. Welcome, welcome. I have with me a very special guest. The one, the only, Mr. Derek Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Chase, for having me here.
How you doing?
Good, good.
Good, excellent. You ditched us there for a couple of weeks. I've been trying to get you on the show for a while.
It's very true. Yeah. I threw out my back shoveling the heaviest snow I think I've ever shoveled, ever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd say that shoveling snow sucks. And I sent you a text and told you I'm going to buy you a snowblower. And you said, funny thing is, I already own a snowblower. And I use my snowblower. But yeah. I decided to go do something by hand. So, yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you recovered from the snow injury.
Yeah.
Why don't you just let us know a little bit about you. Where do you work? How long have you been doing real estate? What's your main area that you work in? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so I'm a residential real estate agent here in Colorado Springs. I co-own Keller Williams Premier downtown, mm-hmm. have a team, Colorado Home Team here in town. I got started my first day in real estate, September 11th, 2001.
Really?
My very first day. Yeah, extraordinary day, to say the least.
You want to know something funny?
Yeah.
I got my real estate license. And I was going to start doing real, this was before I decided that mortgages were the way to go for me, right? So in 2001, I got my real estate license, passed my test, do this, that, and the other. And I was supposed to like just hit the ground running, right? And so it was maybe a week before that is where I kind of started, maybe 2 weeks, something like that. And then all of a sudden, everything shuts down. Nobody knows what to do. There's no houses. I tried doing some open houses like a couple weeks later, and like I just ate a bunch of cookies and drank soda by myself. And like nothing was really happening
until like wild. April when George Bush lowered the rates to 5, which was unheard of.
Well,
at the time.
You know what I did is I actually by that time, I decided that mortgages were for me. So before they lowered rates, I had already. Said, okay, I gotta figure something else out. So I actually got into mortgages. So by the time you really hit the ground running, I was just hitting the ground running with mortgages.
So that means, so you hit that huge refinance boom.
Oh yeah, that's all I did. That's all I did was refis there for three. I wouldn't say that's all, but that was about 3-4 years. Was just, I mean, everybody's refining.
Yeah, you know? It was nuts.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I was getting people even like if I was getting you like a 6.25 interest rate and ever like nobody like probably the best rate of people I was talking to was like 7.5,
mm-hmm.
8.5, yep. 10 wasn't unheard of.
Yep.
Right. So it was kind of a crazy time. So
right. And it's wild right now. And everybody, 7.
Yeah. Wow. 7. Yeah,
good times.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I would say that's a, I had a realtor ask me, it wasn't a realtor, it was a client asked me the other day about interest rates. And she's like, is it going to go back down below 5? And I said, you know, the market doesn't act really good when we get into the 5s, mid 5s, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't act really good if we're 8s and above. Like, we're in this happy little window. You know what I mean? 5.75 to 7.5, it just floats in there, and it allows you. I know house prices are ridiculously high, and interest rates feel ridiculously high in comparison to what they were. But it does allow for our market, I feel, to be a little healthier.
Right? I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree.
So
that
that way you don't run wild with like this crazy buyer's market that's like, you know, there's 100 houses on the market that and you get your pick and you get to think about it for a month, or on the opposite side, a crazy seller's market where you have 15 offers. Instead, it's kind of just a nice, middle ground.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, I think, what people really want.
Yeah.
You know, a good growth.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, okay. So you started 2001. I got off track there.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I just thought it was interesting. We started probably within a week of the
same time. That's crazy. Yeah. So we started 2001. And then, let's see, I didn't make a sale until that April.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I sold 36 homes. So I had a plan.
Yeah.
Before we even started real estate, we, my wife and I, you know, well, we had this epiphany. Actually, what happened was, you know, I was going to at the time you had to go to school. Nothing was online. You know, so you went to school. I went to the real estate school for 3 months. It was horrible. I'm dyslexic. I have ADHD. It's really tough for me to, you know, to
sit
do
through
this.
That crap.
Yeah, it's horrible. But you know, you spend all this time, you have breaks with people and you get to know the class. And I had 30 people in the class. And I was kind of, my heart wasn't really into the real estate industry yet.
Yeah.
Our first class that we had with the instructor, he said, look, 87% of you are not going
to
make it.
That's funny. It's the same thing they did to us.
Yeah. And you're just not going to make it. And then most of you are going to fail in the first 2 years. And he said, those are the lucky ones because another whatever percentage are still going to pursue this career for the next 3 years and end up bankrupt, divorced, and lose their house. And I was like, wow, that's wild. And so he went through this, like, it's not likely that you're going to even make a good living. If you want to make $30,000 a year, it's not likely. You know, it's like, wow, this is nuts. Anyway, so we go through this class. The last class we had was the rookie of the year for Century 21. And he says, he gets up in front of the class and he's like, this is a great career. You know, I just sold 4 homes this month. And he does, you know, he shows what, you know.
Yeah, math on it and all that.
He does the math. He shows the commission. He was making about $22,000. And I was like, looking around the class, knowing that most of these people are broke.
Yeah.
And thinking, they're going
to chase. They borrowed $800 to get in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're going to chase this $22,000 a month and they're broke. And they're going to be the 87% or worse, the ones that keep chasing it for the next 3 years after the 2 years and be worse off than they were when they started. So I was really upset.
Yeah.
I went home and I mean,
really your likelihood for success of becoming a McDonald's manager and making a decent living is much higher.
Much higher. Go to Costco.
Yeah.
You know, and for whatever it was back then.
Yeah.
So I was home. I'm the cook in the house. Yeah. I was, you know, cutting up carrots and my wife was like, what's irritating you? And I was like, man, this mother.
You're aggressively cutting these carrots, Derek.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, this guy came to the class and he said, you make all this money in real estate. And my wife was, you know, was like, well, how much do real estate agents make? And I was, even though I was just showed how much he made, I was like, I don't really know.
Yeah.
So we called our real estate agent that sold us the house and I asked her, you know, how do agents get paid?
Yeah.
Again, went through this whole class, didn't have a clue.
I better call somebody and ask them how it really works.
She kind of gave me the lowdown on it. And I was like, okay. So we get off the phone. I did the math with my wife and I was like, whoa, you can actually make a lot of money doing this.
Yeah.
So we stayed up until about 3 o'clock that evening. And we put together a really aggressive plan on how we're going to sell 4 homes a month.
Oh, wow.
And
being brand new, that's extremely aggressive.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that either at the time. But anyway, so our first sale was April of 2022. And then we sold 36 homes by September of 2022.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
So you went 6 months with doing nothing. Like, well, I mean, you were working, obviously, but without
no success. September 11th happened.
Yeah.
I kept going with our plan. Everything that we said we were going to do, we did. And we just stayed the course. And I was terrified, obviously, quite a few times. Because now at this point, I was invested in it. At first, I wasn't that invested in the industry. But now I was like, I had this plan. I was like, oh, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I'm dyslexic. I have, you know, ADHD super bad and
super good. It's a superpower.
It is a superpower. And it also has kryptonite too.
Yes, but it has a lot of kryptonite. But if you can navigate the minefield, it's quite powerful.
It is. So I remember one day, and my wife was a special needs teacher over at Palmer High School, and it was just about the summertime, and I had 8 transactions going at the same time. And the dinner table was a paperwork disaster. There was paper everywhere.
No e-contracts at the time.
No e-contracts. Yeah. And you printed your inspection report.
Yeah.
Right. So this thing, you know, our files were 3 inches thick. Yeah. It was insane. And so I'm almost crying. My wife comes home. She said, you want me to get you, like, kind of get you squared away? And I was like, yeah. She organizes all my files and starts doing my TC work. This is, you know, not really. This is kind of before transaction coordinators.
You're like, hold on a second.
Yeah. And then that was the fire. Yeah. When she kind of systemized the transaction, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's on. And now that's how I was able to sell so many properties between then and the next September.
Well, if you run in an ADHD mindset and there's a systematic approach to something, very few people can touch your power. However, if you inject two or three elements of chaos, that is the kryptonite, right?
Correct.
That's where it's like, I just went down a rabbit hole for 9 days on something that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, I need
happens to me all constantly.
I need to just be very focused on this.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then we sold 48 the next year. And then, I felt like we kind of hit the ceiling.
Well, I was going to say, that's your four right there.
Yeah.
Within 2 years, you got it.
Yeah.
Within a year.
We hit the ceiling and, the MREA book came out. The Millionaire Real Estate book.
Oh, the Keller Williams one?
Yeah, Gary Keller wrote the book. I read it again, dyslexic. It's tough for me to read. I read that thing 12 times. I couldn't put it down. It was amazing. And at the time, there was a couple of pseudo teams in town. And I mean, husband, wife.
Yeah, yeah.
Husband, wife, and somebody else.
Yeah.
But there was nobody had buyer agents. Hmm. So we quickly put together a plan. To build a team, we built the largest team at the time, Colorado Springs. It was called the Advantage Team, and we had 21 people total
on the team,
and we were murdering it. It was crazy. So
did you learn that from the book? Is that where you got the idea to do that?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, we just followed. I had a business partner at the time, Sean, love him to death, and we just went crazy.
Do you feel that the lessons in there are still as relevant today as they were then?
I mean, I wouldn't do it the same way
that
I did it that back then. But also it was an uncharted kind of land that we were, you know, obviously I could manage me and my wife together were one thing, but leading agents, leading other staff, leading, you know, I was in deep water, and I probably wouldn't. I always have this weird thing. Would you go back and change things? I would, you know, no, because, you know, if something changed, would I, you know, would I be here or learn the lessons or, you know, so I wouldn't necessarily change anything, but I definitely would do. If you picked me up, put me in Florida, I would not have done it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
the beatings made you wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good times.
So, and now how long have you owned KW?
7 years.
7 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
8 years.
Okay. Years. How many, if you don't mind me asking, how many owners are there?
There's me, Tiffany Locknett, Jeff Johnson, Dan Noel, Chris Klontz, Matt Lee.
Oh, so you got a.
And Olivia, who's our MCA. You probably don't know her. She's an administrator. Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah.
And Tanya Towles.
Okay. Yeah. So all of you guys have ownership in that.
Correct.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel that makes you, I guess, a stronger, you know, most places are owned by the franchise owner, right? You guys have a lot of legitimate, you know, real estate agents, real estate teams that are owning that. Have you found any challenges on that, or is it? Because with that many successful people, you're going to have some opinions, I would imagine.
We do have opinions. We're all very opinionated. But I would also say that we also kind of know our space, our place.
Okay.
You know, like Tanya is really good at social media. So if we need social media kind of manage, we go to her, you know. You know, we have our managing partner, if you will, Matt, and he does a good job, you know, kind of showing us, you know, leading the way. So I think we work well together.
Yeah, good.
I would also say we're also very busy. And so sometimes, you know, one or more will take breaks from actively recruiting
or
teaching classes or whatever it is. And then others step in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been good.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. So, I have a list of questions. You told me nothing's off limits. So we're going to talk about questionable things in your past, if that's okay.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Sweet. Not really, but I want to, there's a few things I want to hit. I'll hit you a couple bullet points that I want to hit, in the next, 30 minutes or so. I'd like to know about your philosophy on handling leads, your philosophy on live transactions, and kind of like post-closing, how do you repeat and referral business? So that's a whole, I know that's like, a month of information, but I'm going to try to condense this down. Okay. But before I do that, first, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I wrote these down and I just want your immediate thought. Okay. You have the option here. It's like a game show.
Okay.
You have the option to answer your immediate thought, or you can take the fifth.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Good. I like the fifth.
Okay.
The fifth.
Before we even start, I'll take the fifth. Okay. Zillow. Yes. What your thoughts? Feel free to throw your feelings and actual thoughts both.
Oh gosh. I have a lot of thoughts about Zillow.
Okay.
This could be almost a total podcast. I find them very interesting. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the consumers like them.
Very user-friendly website.
Yeah. I mean, I see it's a trap for a lot of agents because they like to get – yes, man – They like the Zillow leads, and then they neglect the rest of their business. Mm. So that's a piece. I find a couple of things interesting. One, they've really never posted a profit except for two quarters their entire existence, which I think is interesting that Wall Street keeps shoveling money.
Well, and like when they started their iBuying platform, what was like 2-3 years ago, and they went in so aggressive. It was during, when rates were still 3%, and then they just crumbled. That whole department they lost hundreds of millions of dollars, just completely crumbled.
That was one of their first times that they posted a profit.
Interesting.
When they brought their mortgage product out.
Yeah.
Those two quarters that they first did, they posted profits, which I thought was interesting.
Interesting.
Then they crumbled right after that.
Wow. Okay. So it was maybe a lot of market hype, maybe something.
I have no idea. I don't know enough about Wall Street, how the stock game is played, because I know a lot of it is a stock play.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting that Wall Street just shovels money.
So you don't necessarily hate Zillow, but you don't necessarily love Zillow. You can see that it could be a trap for some agents, but it could also help leverage other agents to boost their business. Is that kind of the feeling?
There's a lot
of
teams that, I don't know what their percentage is, but it's high. A lot of their business comes from Zillow. I watch when every time Zillow makes a, it's their business model. And if they want to change their business model, they do so whenever they want.
Yeah.
And then you're beholden to their business model and it's a trap now you have to pivot. And not that that's bad.
It's kind of like us as a mortgage company using UWM, right?
And right.
I know you don't know a ton about that, but it is, they provide so much and then you become dependent and then they change something. And then also you're like, wait, I don't particularly like this anymore, but I have three other elements of my business that are riding on this.
Right.
So I've got to, what am I going to do?
Yep.
Yeah. It's a interesting thing when you deal with multi-billion-dollar companies and you're reliant on some of that.
Yep.
So there was a, long, long, long time ago is this business guy that I was talking to and his advice to me, two things. Number one, a factory can never run at 100% efficiency. And I think of that with mortgages. They're like, well, we have capacity to do this or we have capacity to do that. Told you my alarm was going to go off. We have capacity to do this or that, but they really don't. The other thing is he said never rely on one supplier or one
purchaser.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. One area, because you do that and that person changes the game. If you're, you know, if you got 30% of your business going there, great. Run with it, right? You got 50%, 60, 70, 80, 90, and they make changes, your whole world can change.
Right.
And maybe for the good, maybe for the bad.
Overnight. And then everybody that you've employed, everybody mm-hmm. that depends on you are also, they feel those.
Yep.
They feel that, and it's really tough.
So, okay.
So I would say this. Overall, Zillow has its own place. Okay. It has its place. I don't work with Zillow. I don't use Zillow.
But it has its place. Okay. Yeah. Now, in that same vein, if you're going to do a real estate business with somebody, would you pick Musk, Zuckerberg, or Trump?
Elon, hands down.
Yeah. Gotcha. I guess he could land a rocket, auto drive cars. He could probably engineer you. Okay, cool. Ready for another one? NAR.
Yeah. What about him?
Just what's your impression? What do you think? How do you feel?
So I am the managing broker for KW Premier. I haven't made.
Is this where you take the fifth on this part? Well,
I haven't made any public
position
statements on the lawsuit.
Sure.
I will say this. I see a lot of people very viscerally angry with NAR right now.
Realtors. Public realtors. Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of misinformation mm-hmm. on the lawsuit. I would say that so far, I think what their settlement so far mm-hmm. has been a pretty good business move.
Okay.
If you look at it as a business move and not as a member.
Okay. Not as you being a real estate brokerage owner or a realtor. It's more them running their business. It was a
business play.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think they did the right so far. Mm-hmm. I think they are doing
so. I had a real estate agent the other day. I was talking. I talked a little smack about NAR, and she actually owns a brokerage here in town as well. And she said, Tim, she's like, I'm so tired of people talking crap about NAR.
Oh, interesting.
She said,
because I'm only hearing people talking.
Yeah, crap right. And I said, well, what do you mean? I said, and I started, you know, I kind of threw out a few things, but I was like, okay, she's probably more educated on this topic than I am. But she went through and she said, what happened during COVID? How did we become essential? Because of NAR, because of them fighting, because of them helping us. What happened? She gave me like three or four different examples of how you guys have stayed relevant because of that. She didn't mention them selling the realtor name and all that kind
that
of stuff.
That was, I mean, they have, that was probably the biggest faux pas they sold that name to.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have done that.
Rupert Murdoch's company. Yeah. But at the same, and then they sell the data over to Zillow, and that spawned that whole little thing. But at the same time, NAR right now, there is a lot of crazy stuff people are saying, and I hear it, like it's a daily thing when I talk to real estate daily. They talk about it now. Right when that settlement came out, it was 3-4 times a day I was talking to agents, and I mean they would even ask me, well, what are you guys going to do about mortgages to help us out?
I'm like, funny, I don't know. Wow, well that's not your problem to solve.
Well, and that's kind of what I said. I said, well, when the mortgage market makes a change, I have to adapt to that. And I try to make it least impact possible to my clients, my real estate partners, everybody, right? So this, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be up to VA, it's going to be up to Fannie Mae, FHA, all that. I don't know. It was weird that I would get that question about 50% of the time. I'm like,
yeah.
What do you want to happen? I don't have a magic wand, right? What were you going to say about the mortgages, though?
I don't remember.
When I mentioned that people said, you know, what's the mortgage industry going to do about it?
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's the mortgage industry's problem to solve. Hmm. I think, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to make a position statement, especially on a public forum, that we don't even actually know what we're making a statement about yet.
And that's very true. That's the thing. It's not even finalized. Right.
Right. Like, and I keep seeing everything I do see on social media or anywhere, it's almost all half truths.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm watching this incredibly close.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of fear and a lot of worry. I mean, you know, I've seen, and the news isn't helping. You know, I the other day, somebody was, I saw a news clip and they're like, oh, the prices of homes are going to come down 20 to 30% because of this lawsuit. And I was what are you
How is that even possible?
Yeah, how is that possible? Yeah. Like, first of all, anyway, I don't want to get it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me because I see the same thing. And I hear people say stuff like, it's going to be much cheaper to, you know, to sell my house or this. And it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me because it still costs money to do stuff. I don't understand the huge impact. I understand it'll change stuff, but every decision changes stuff, right? I worked at a company one time, a mortgage company. They got fined when CFPB first came out.
Oh, yeah.
And they were just on a
witch hunt. Wasn't that in like
2014, something like that. Okay. Yeah, no, it was like 14, 15. Okay. It was like when CFPB really just came mm-hmm. knocking on everybody's door and just hitting everybody.
Right.
And I got an email one morning and it said, before this hits the news tomorrow, we just want to let you know that we've settled with the CFPB for $70 million. We've paid it. We're done. And I was like, what did we do wrong? My company sucks, right? But then I started reading and they attached it. They said, here's the whole thing, their findings. We disagree with it, but it was actually, as you mentioned, a business move is what the right. owner of the company said. This is a right. business move.
Right.
I thought, well, that's weird. So I started reading it and they were fining them for things that like 12 years ago, you had a junior underwriter approve this item when clearly a senior underwriter was supposed to approve it, even though the loan performed perfectly. There was no issues. There was no fraud. There was no nothing, but just weird things like that, right? Where they were just going after. But I thought it was a little, I was like $70 million, man, that's crazy. But then it took a little bit to marinate. But then after a while, I'm like, the business owner made it a good business decision.
It was a cheaper move to do that and to protect themselves
an entire law firm for the next year.
Right.
And then probably settling for $50 million anyway.
Exactly.
Right? So, yeah. Okay, one last one. Ready?
Yeah.
BlackRock.
Oh.
I'm glad I finally got some sort of reaction out of you. You've been pretty neutral so far. So, yeah.
They are the one I would love to see them fall apart. I'm really not a BlackRock fan.
I don't know. Well, you know, since we spoke about Zillow.
I think BlackRock might have funded the attorney on that lawsuit.
I thought about that.
The day after the lawsuit, they posted on X, mm-hmm. Investors get ready to pounce. Essentially, buyers no longer, you know, people don't feel like buyers have representation now. Now it's their time to take what, I mean.
What the heck? That's crazy.
Yeah, I feel like they would love nothing more than the saying of you'll own nothing and like it. And they'll be the ones that own it.
Everything that I see, they own.
They own everything. They own most of the stock market.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, when you look at raw land, how much raw land they own, how many vacant properties, why do they own so many vacant properties? Thousands. Why is that? I have no idea. I mean, there's a lot of opinions, and I can see
we're
an opinion.
We're going to get some tinfoil hats here.
Opinion just started happening. But at the same time, it's bizarre that they're able to have their hands so deep into the real estate world,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Even Rupert Murdoch's company that owns the Realtor brand. And see, this is where it gets a little weird. They own the Realtor brand that NAR sold to them.
Yep.
BlackRock is a massive investor into that company.
Yep.
So it's just weird.
And Zillow.
It's bizarre, mm-hmm. right? They own part of left media and right media. It's almost like if there's a fight and a shakeup, they're better. I don't know. I don't understand the whole thing, but it's a little crazy.
Yeah. Lockheed Martin. They own way too much.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
And yet we're really worried about TikTok. But anyway, let's move on. So let's go on to actual productive stuff because I feel like the rabbit hole that I could take us down now.
We could have fun. We could do.
It would go quite deep, but we're going to try to stay on topic here because we want to bring real value, legit value to all the agents. Let's talk about marketing. What have you found locally that you feel like with your team? Are you guys mainly past clients? Are you going after new listings? Are you targeting FSBOs, you know, social media? Like where are you finding the most traction right now?
Right. Well, that's a good question right now. I will first say this. Mm-hmm. I recently have merged my team with Tiffany Locknett's team.
Okay.
And we're very different in the way we handle leads, how mm-hmm. we market to leads. And so currently, I'm usually sphere-based / some sort of community-type marketing.
Okay.
With some other lead source, whether it's, like Dave Ramsey.
Yeah, yep. Like the preferred
ELP type things. I'm no longer at ELP with Dave Ramsey, but, those kinds of things. We were pretty heavy online mm-hmm. for a very long time.
When you say online, are you meaning, because before you mentioned you don't buy Zillow leads.
So online, I'm going to say from 2006 through 2015, mm-hmm. We had a huge SEO play.
Okay.
So if you Googled Colorado Springs homes for sale, we were number one.
Yeah.
For that entire time. So that was our SEO play. Then we've spent a lot of time playing with pay-per-click, GLS, mm-hmm. Those kinds of things. So that type of online lead gen.
Okay. So right now, though, you're feeling more sphere-based is working for you?
But the whole entire time we were sphere-based.
Okay.
And when I say a community, what I essentially mean by that is we've had this database mm-hmm. for a really long time.
Yeah.
And,
we've been building it for 23 years, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So those are the people we market to for the most part. Mm-hmm. So, Mariana, my wife, and I had about 9,000 people in a database.
Okay.
And we just communicate to them in a meaningful way. And that's where we get the vast majority of our business.
Referral business from them?
There's a lot of them that we've never spoke to.
Oh.
That still engage with our content.
Hmm.
But I would say that's our community. So there's our sphere,
mm-hmm.
The folks who refer us yearly.
Okay. Yeah.
And then those that we've never spoken to that eventually raise their hand or, we communicate to them
it's a constant communication with a target though.
Right.
Right. So it's not necessarily a shotgun approach in the yellow pages or the newspaper, right? Which those don't exist really, but
right.
That idea where it's just like, hey, we're a real estate agent, same as 5,000 other people. Instead it's more, we have you, we know something about you, you've done business with us, your family's done business with something, and we're going to directly communicate, either sending you valuable content, giving you a call, sending you a pumpkin at Halloween or whatever it is that you do, right?
Right.
Gotcha. So that one's interesting because I do know quite a few teams right now that are solely surviving on lead purchase. Right?
Okay.
And this is not to say
it's
bad, but that is all they're doing.
Okay.
And I don't know if these are newer agents necessarily, but having that dependency on lead purchase, I would say that it's almost like when loan officers become, when the market gets good and they all become refi loan officers
right.
all of a sudden, and they just start buying,
right.
Trigger leads and
right.
online leads and everything that they can. But if you're not building, as you said, you're not building that database and you're not building that sphere system, you're in it for a short-term job and not for a 23-year home run career.
Right.
Right. So, okay, let's move to the next one really quickly. Now, you said you joined with Tiffany recently.
Yeah.
So you took all of your team, all her team, and you all merged together.
Correct.
Right? Okay. So when a lead is generated, whether that's an online lead or whether somebody just calls in, something like that, what's a good flow for lead handling? You mentioned you and her do it slightly different, right? So how do you...
Well, now typically when we get a new lead, they're... Depending if they're a seller or a buyer, mm-hmm. they are communicated in a way that a buyer or seller would want to be communicated to. We do, so typically it's 3 calls in the first day.
In the first day?
Yeah. So okay, they come in, we call them immediately. We run, you know, we look to see if it's a real phone number, if they might own a home. We do a little bit of recon before we make the first phone call, but we get that done fairly quick. Everybody on the team has mastered how to skip trace people and
just bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, we blow through that super quickly. Write notes in our CRM about the person, and then make the phone call. And then if we don't get them, we're calling them at a different time, and then a different time late. Now this is obviously if we get the.
Not at six in the evening.
Yeah, if it's 6 in the evening, we're not
calling. Steven, are you awake?
Hello.
This is Derek. I would like to talk about homes. Yeah. You're not going to quite go that far.
Right. Okay. We'll call the next day.
Gotcha.
We'll call the initial phone call and then the next two the next day. And then so we're just trying to hit them up a couple of different times during the day. We then we text them. Mm-hmm. Some people like to be communicated with just text. Mm-hmm. We also make an email.
Now, do you do that? What's the workflow look like there? You make the 3 calls and then text, or you make a call, then text?
We call, and text, and email.
Okay, gotcha.
They do get a welcome email from us as soon as they – if they were a buyer and they registered to look at property, they do get a welcome email right before we even call them.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then call and text.
Okay.
And then a call and email. And then we just kind of – follow the plan for the next, I want to say it's 4 days in total.
Okay.
To try to.
Just more of an aggressive type follow-up.
Yes. And then we put them into a plan after that. Then we have.
So that's assuming that you don't get a hold of them. But
correct.
Let's say you get a hold of them on day 4. How does the workflow work or vary from there? How does it change?
Well, it depends if they're in, again, buyer or seller.
Right.
We get as much information as we can about them, about their move, their goals, their plans. Mm-hmm. And then if they're an out-of-state buyer, it's, you know, time frame obviously is a big deal. We go through their motivation, if they've been approved, all of those kinds of things. So we have kind of a phone consult, I guess that would be. And then we try to get them into the office and have a buyer consultation with them.
And that was going to be actually the question I was kind of writing down.
But sometimes you don't always are able to do that in the event that you have out-of-state buyers.
So if they're in the city, you try to meet with them in your office, or doesn't matter if it's their house versus your office, or do you try to get them into the office?
We try to get them in the office. Okay. I don't typically meet with them at their house, although I have.
Yeah.
You know, if it makes sense, I've had people that had twins, a few months before they started their home purchasing journey. I did meet with them at their house. And plenty of our agents do meet with them at the house, but it's not our first go-to.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So I'm just going to go on a side note here. I closed a loan one time. I it was during this refi time that we talked about, not the recent one, but like back in 2000, maybe like, I don't know, 2 or something like that. And this, when I took the application, I met them at their house, because I met everybody at their houses, right?
Interesting.
I had a very, like you had a very system for doing that. I struggled in real estate in 2001 when I first got licensed. It was very difficult for me, and it could have been the environment, and maybe I'm blessed to have started at that point and quickly realized when I started doing mortgages, like, this makes sense, because I can have a mapped plan of exactly what I need to do. So I had a very clear plan as well, and part of it was meeting them at their house, gathering documents. I did an initial phone call, and then I would meet them at their house, I'd do a live loan. I'd type it in, then print it, and they'd have to go, sign everything. And then I'd gather documents. I'd take it back to the office. We'd, look
scan
through
them
it.
In.
Yeah. Well, it was like a flatbed. Like,
right.
We'd scan it in. But this couple, she was pregnant with twins, because you mentioned that, And when I had their loan locked, we were ready to go. Loan was done. And I call them like, hey, we're ready. Whoa. Sarah, whatever her name is, just had twins last night. I was like, okay, your lock expires in like 2 days. So what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And they're like, we can't really leave. They like the hospital wants her to be here. And the husband's just talking like all chill. He's like, can you come down to the hospital? I'm like, is your wife okay with that? Like, hey, you okay with it? She's like, yeah. So I take this whole stack of papers, you know, yeah. And I'm in there. Okay. She's laying in bed, right? You know, looks like she had, you know, just went through like a street fight. Right. And signing and like passing it over. I'm passing him like, well, congratulations. Right on. Have a good day. Yeah.
That's interesting. So do you still do that today?
I will meet. Well, I don't do applications like that. Everything can be e-signed. Online. Everything can be e-signed. So I do, the way that I do it is I want to have a connection with the people. So the whole sending you directly to an app doesn't work with my personality, because then you're the order taker, and then they turn yourself into a commodity, and then it's everybody, you know, some chop shop's going to do it for $8 instead of 10. So I always want to have that initial phone call. And the way that we do it is I try to meet them where they're at. So if they're older, they always want to either meet me in person, and so I have them come down to the office, or we do it over the phone, typically over the phone. Or I give them the option, like, are you comfortable doing it? Or are you more comfortable, you know, filling out an online application tonight? Or are you more comfortable having a 10-minute phone call with me right now to get the ball rolling? And it's about 50-50. Depends on what, you know, depends on what they want to do. But I always want to meet them where they're at. But I will make a better connection if I have that direct conversation. I can do a much better job of my pre-approval as well. Make sure it's
so very thorough. So in the event that you're meeting with them in person, mm-hmm. do you get more referrals from those or from the ones that never meet you?
Oh, crap, man. I need to measure that. I have no idea. That's a very good question. Logic would tell me that the people that come in, I would get more referrals from, but I don't know. I've never measured that ever. I've never even thought about measuring it. So here you are giving me some business ideas.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I, you know, if I tell new, you know, managing broker again at KWP, and I obviously meet with new people all the time, and I find that a lot of agents are trying to do everything remotely,
yep.
and they end up not getting near the referrals I feel they should be getting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure if it's just they're not asking for it, or if they're not. I don't know.
I think it's harder. It's harder to get it, I think, doing it remote. So keep in mind though that a lot of our clients, even if I do stuff over the phone, very few want to come in and meet. Right. Even people, you know, on their seventh house and they're 70 years old, but there's a certain personality that wants to come in and meet regardless of the age. They want to come in and meet, they want to sit down, and it makes sense to them, right? So I'll do an initial phone call with them, and then they'll sit down with me. I do go to all of our closings, or however many we can, right? And so usually we've built enough rapport that enough connection, because, you know, I'm asking very detailed stuff of like, where did this $400 of, you know, cash deposit come in?
Right.
Learning that they sold some stuff on Craigslist. Right. And, you know, so kind of similar to you guys, but I will end up meeting them at closing, and we try to make closing very special. So we don't want to make it just show up and sign. I'm just going to sit there. I want to make them feel like this is a freaking awesome day. Like this is amazing. And I call them ahead of time. You know, I'm going to be there. One of my team members is going to be there. If you have any questions at all, or if they're signing remote, I'll talk to them and say, hey, just to let you know, I know you're closing at 1:00. Our phone is completely on. I don't care what I'm in the middle of. If I see your phone call come through because you have a question on something, like say they're signing in, you know, Kentucky or something, right? Call and I will answer it. I'll go through anything. And I always kind of go through some disclosures ahead of time. But I meet most people eventually, where I know a lot of loan officers don't meet people at all.
Yeah.
But I would say, now this is where it's going to get a little bit, maybe I have a little bit more data than I was leading on. When I used to meet with everybody, the rapport was unbelievable. They would invite me over for dinner. They wanted to be friends. Whereas now, even when I do meet them at closing, some people do. You know, maybe 25% of them are like, oh, you know, they feel a really a stronger friendship type connection. Whereas before it was like, I don't know, probably 80-90% of people, that I would go to their homes and I would sit in their home and I would, you know, their dog would be, you know, licking my shoe or something, and, you know, and they'd, it was a little more intimate,
right?
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And yeah, I think that's been lost a little bit too, yeah, from technology. And I mean, because if you're going to ask for a referral, mm-hmm, you have to do the things that deserve referrals.
Yeah.
And you or you have to have connections.
Yeah.
Deserving a referral.
Yeah.
And
it's,
I think
it's not about having $10 cheaper at your price.
It's not.
It's making that.
Right.
Making a much deeper connection. Right. There was a, what was that phrase? The, it was a Gary Vaynerchuk. And we've used it a handful of times in the last couple months when he said, the more the world acts like the Jetsons and the more you treat people like the Flintstones, your business is just gonna
take love
off.
That.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you have a robot doing your stuff, but mm-hmm, can I foot pedal you to the store?
Right.
You know what I mean? So yeah, it's a little bit different. Yeah.
Do your clients feel cared for?
Like, yeah,
you would,
yeah,
foot traffic them to the King Supers, yeah, or whatever.
I actually drove a lady one time, speaking of, this is during the time that I used to meet with everybody. I don't know why she didn't have a car, right? She didn't have a car for whatever reason. And we had to go, she was going to be the closing, but she had to go to the bank to get a cashier's check. And I remember that morning, like, and I had this little, I actually still have the pickup. It's a little 92 Toyota pickup.
Oh, those, you know, are, I mean, the best.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Those are the best.
So I go to her house and exhaust wasn't awesome, but it wasn't, right, horrible. It was a little, you know, maybe right, a little rattly. Yeah. I pick her up, and I'm like, got my shirt and tie on. You know what I mean? We show up to the bank. She goes into the bank, does her thing. She gets back in my truck or driver, you know. So yeah, it's kind of a lot more personal.
Yeah,
a whole lot more personal.
Yeah,
you know, if somebody asked me to drive me to the bank now, I'd probably send them a link to an Uber app.
Right.
You know,
totally.
Be like, hey, dude, for like $13.
Right.
Oh, geez, we're rambling on here. Let me ask you another relevant question.
All right.
Okay, because I feel like we could go a couple hours
irrelevant
information.
Yes.
Post closing process. Somebody closes on a transaction with you. Give me an idea from the time you get to closing. Do you guys do gifts? Do you do gifts? I know some people deliver gifts, like they'll wait a week and then stop by the house and do a gift. Some people do gifts at closing. Some, and then, what is like your annual kind of follow-up with that? So can you kind of give me a ballpark look,
okay,
on that?
Okay, so post-closing, I usually have a – so first of all, my wife makes the closing gifts, and they're freaking amazing. They're insane. And people love them.
What is it? It's a
homemade, it's a basket
craft
full
type
of,
thing?
Yeah. Yeah. She, okay, has – I don't even know. She has a Cricut, and she has this little forge,
wow,
glow,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I'm familiar, yeah.
And
then,
so
cool,
she makes all of these things.
Very personalized.
Yes. It's,
wow.
It's, oh, yeah, very personal. And we do – she'll make Christmas ornaments for them. She'll make – you
holy
know,
cow, wow.
Yeah, it's okay. – so she does a freaking amazing job with the –
we have just unlocked the key to Derek's success.
It's my wife.
He's got eight. He can connect with people. He's got eight contracts on his kitchen table in 2002. He doesn't know what to do. Yeah. He's about to freak out.
Yep.
Marianne comes, yep, in and settles.
Superwoman.
It all.
Yeah. Here she comes, and she. If it weren't for her, I wouldn't be in his business, yeah, for sure, 100%. Yeah. So
that's at closing.
Yeah, that's at closing.
Okay.
I typically figure out when they're trying to move in, unless this, okay, isn't. By the way. Investors, I don't do anything for them.
Yeah,
I get them a smoking deal.
I was gonna say that's they're looking at the performance. They're looking, yeah, at the dollars.
Yeah,
so,
and, you know, so it's not about that. But I typically figure out when they're moving in, and I come by around lunches with a pizza and some root beer and some vanilla ice cream.
Oh wow!
And you know, just kind of say hi. I don't move anything. I kind of dress the way that I'm not going to be
like
moving anything.
Three-piece suit, plus I just injured my back.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I just shoveled snow.
It's July. It's still just, it's, you know.
Yeah.
So you show up. That's kind of a post-close kind of, mm-hmm, connection.
Yeah, right, and then I usually typically call them after the first month. Mm. And then we give them a yearly, or not yearly, at the end of their the January of the next year, mm-hmm. we give them their settlement statement because typically they forget about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. And that's going to be for
their taxes.
Okay, gotcha.
Then we just put them on our long-term sphere campaign, mm-hmm. which is typically we do item of value once a quarter.
Okay. What's value?
You know, it just depends. So I'll tell you what they are right now. So St. Patrick's Day, mm-hmm. we always send out a scratch-off ticket.
Ah.
Again, my wife does this Cricut yeah. thing. She makes handwritten cards for everybody in our sphere. And there's...
Unbelievable.
I want to say there's 820 people she does this for.
Wow.
And so handwritten card that's handmade with this scratch-off ticket, and people freaking love it.
You don't pay her enough.
I know, I don't.
Whatever it is, you don't.
we do the Bronco
calendar schedule.
Yeah. Which I thought was the most ridiculous thing ever.
People love that.
They yeah. love it.
Do you do the magnet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go to listing appointments. This is no joke.
Yeah.
And 4 or 5 of my magnets with my stupid face is on there.
Yeah.
From things that my wife.
You're like, out here I don't sending. Remember sending that.
I know. It's the craziest thing. Yeah. So these calendars. Yeah. We do an actual calendar. And then. So
these are actual things that you're sending out to all your sphere, and you're saying, hey, you know, I'm still relevant to you, and here's some value to you. I think that a
and
lot
we
of
do a CMA. So those are the four things.
Okay.
For the quarter.
And when do you do a CMA once a year?
Yeah, for everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then
you mail that, email that. What do you do?
Well, first we ask them if they want one.
Okay.
Because a lot of times.
So now you're making a call.
Yeah. And then if they want one, you know, then we and then I'd like to go present it to them, and that doesn't always happen. Yeah.
That is a lot of hands-on.
But it really works. Okay, so yeah. then we do a monthly mailed newsletter.
Okay.
And Mariana does that. She manages that. When we had kids,
yeah.
Both my kids were in dance. We got the whole dance studio to do our mailings. It's great. Slave labor is for real. And so
you want to stay in dance, you're gonna mail that calendar.
Yeah, that's
kid.
Right. You gotta pay for dance. It was expensive.
That tutu ain't free.
So we mail, and mm-hmm. the reason why we do that and why it's so successful is they can't unsubscribe from it. We have a lot of
yeah,
cool little calls to action in it, and then we do weekly emails that are mm-hmm. relevant, and then.
Boy, I got to tell you, if an agent did 25% of that on a sphere, they would have success.
Yeah, I will say this, though.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for a really long time. You've got to start the day that you get into the business. You need yeah. to start your sphere campaign. Nothing else. That's the one thing you need to concentrate on. You need to be touching them.
You know what I was taught in 2001?
What's that?
This is like right out of the gate. I was taught that my sphere was important, but here's what they said. And I know they still say this, but they left a lot of detail out. They said, write down 100 people. That's your sphere of influence. And I had never heard of that before, right? I'd been in sales for a long time. I never heard of a sphere of influence. I've been in retail sales, right? Okay. That's my sphere. I couldn't even come up with 100 people at first. I'm like, man, I haven't talked to this dude in like 4 years. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I had to come up with 100. So I came up with 100. And they said, now you're going to call every one of them and tell them, you know, that you're in real estate. So I called every one of them, told them real estate. But one thing I think that they had a major flaw in is there was no plan beyond that, right? There was no value item. There was no reason like, hey, Tim, I hope you're doing good. Well, okay, cool. So you're in real estate. Like, right on. I drive a truck now. Right on. So later, dude, you know, so it was really like not, there was just no real, there was no social media, like zero social media right. at the time. In fact, at that time I had dial up. Mm-hmm. I was super pumped
right.
when I,
yeah, that was awesome.
I super pumped when I updated, when I upgraded to high speed through the phone line. Right. I was like, yeah, but it was, yep. you know, your mom tries calling. It's,
yeah, I was going to say my wife liked busy. To pick up the phone when I was on dial up and messed me up when
like,
it was on the MLS. It was horrible.
Come on. I got mail. I got stuff to do. What are you doing? But the point is like, there was no real plan beyond that.
Right.
There was no let me do a CMA, even if you're just in my sphere and I hadn't sold you a house and I hadn't sold your house, whatever, let me do a CMA on your house. Like none of that. Like, no, I wasn't taught any of that. Right. So following your plan, it's a recipe for success. Right.
Yeah. I mean, because really after that, and I would say you should start with 200 people,
okay,
by the way. And if you would do this, you know, start with 200 people, communicate with them in a meaningful way. And then your job is to do one thing, is to add people to your sphere. Mm. And that's your daily job then, is to like communicate with people that in a way that is meaningful,
yeah,
respond to anything that people who are engaging in your content.
Yeah.
So you're managing though, yep, that, but then just add to it.
Mm-hmm.
On your way to 1,000 people,
mm-hmm,
you know, if you're gonna say my goal, and I've challenged this to a lot of people, your goal is to get to 1,000 sphere as fast as you can, and that's gonna take 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
And you don't need to intimately know all of these people, but they need to hear from you,
yeah,
consistently, mail, email.
You're not talking just buying their name. You're talking, you had a conversation with them at the, yeah, grocery store. You're going to send them something. You, yep, have some sort of follow-up.
So when I first started in 2002, I would do open houses.
Mm-hmm.
I would knock all the neighbors' doors,
yeah,
to the left, to the right. I don't know if you could get away with that now. During COVID, you certainly couldn't. But I was, you know, I'd knock on everybody's door. But really what I was doing, I was also pulling up every expired listing that had expired over the last 5 years and figuring out if they did or did not sell again. And
oh,
if they,
wow,
didn't,
so it wasn't
sell,
just what expired this today or this week. You,
right,
were going back.
Way back. And then I would knock on their door. Hey, I'm doing an open house on 123 Main Street. I was wondering, would you like to – I noticed that you tried to sell 3 years ago.
Wow.
Would you like to do, yeah, an open house right afterwards? And all I would need is a one-day listing agreement.
It's
and
such
I,
good
I,
ideas.
And then so then I would give them a sheet of paper and said, this is what you need to, yeah, do to get ready for the open house. We would do a 3-day listing agreement. And then at the end,
I don't know
of
anybody
it,
that did that back then.
Yeah, well, I did. And then those
I know,
people,
I know Derek.
I would put those people in my database to get to the 1,000, right? So yeah, I was adding them. But, yeah, also what was happening was they were like, you know what? Since I cleaned the house and I got ready and we took a photo, I would also talk to them about why they were selling, where they were going, mm-hmm, kind of dug into, you know, their dream.
Yeah.
And then it was a conversation of, well, I'm already here. Why don't I just continue to list the house for a little while? Oh, yeah, really? That's just crazy. Wow. Let's do that.
Could you do that for me, Derek?
do you
mind?
It's just an amendment extend now. Just change the date. And then we were getting, but the real point was, yeah, to just build the database.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was to add more people, mm-hmm, into the database than I had the day before.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I wish we had more time, Derek.
Yeah, me too.
I think that is fantastic information. I got about 1,000 other things I'd like to go over, but for the sake of time, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We really enjoyed it. If let's say we have a random person listen to this and they just want to get a hold of Derek, how do they get a hold of you?
I mean, I guess my cell phone would probably be the best, 719-210-5258.
5258. Easy, yep, enough. All right. Appreciate it. That's another episode of Cut to the Chase, agentsuccesspodcast.com.
Boom.
That wraps up another episode of Agent Success Podcast. Remember, you can find new episodes each week at agentsuccesspodcast.com. We hope you found the insights and best practices shared today truly valuable. And if you did, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Remember, your success is a journey of learning and improvement. So let's keep hustling, thriving, and learning. Until next week, this is Tim Chase.